RadioMD. RadioMD.com.
The eye care revolution is here. Time for the Wizard of Eyes. Here's Dr. Robert Abel Jr.
Let's talk about veterinary ophthalmology. Doesn't your dog or your monkey or the neighbor's crocodile deserve to have an eye exam once in a while? Or maybe not. But at least you want to know you have a competent practitioner to take them to. So I thought I'd review a little bit about the history of veterinary ophthalmology and talk about how some ways the animal's eyes are different. Obviously, we did not think of animals being very high in the chain of life because we would say, I wouldn't even do that for my dog. But different academics thought about these things and recognized with comparative anatomy in medical schools that it was interesting to look at the eyes of other creatures. And many ophthalmologists, medical ophthalmologists, are interested in these kind of pursuits. So there's definitely a need to help animals with poor vision, dry eyes, cataracts, etc. So how did all of this come about? Well, the early veterinary ophthalmologists and their texts came out of medical schools because they realized that they needed to know more about it, and they recognized that there were technical devices like an ophthalmoscope, like a slit lamp, that they could actually look in. And the eye is a great vehicle because it's clear and you can look in and see where the level of tissue is abnormal to know what to do about it. And so in Vienna and Berlin in particular, and a couple other German cities, ophthalmology was very developed in terms of instrumentation, technique, and then even curiosity, so that the first veterinary schools began there somewhere between 1875 and 1910, although they couldn't do much, they could start examining. In fact, Queen Victoria, Victoria's secret was she didn't trust English ophthalmologists at the turn of the 1900, so she went to Vienna for her care. Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote the Sherlock Holmes stories, trained as an ophthalmologist in Vienna because that was the best place to be. So the Germans were there and were the first ones doing it, and they got involved in pathology, looking at animal eyes that have been removed after death, because then they could figure out what the cause is. You know, there's four kinds of doctors. Medical doctors know nothing, and I mean, know everything, do nothing. Surgeons know nothing, do everything. Psychiatrists neither know or do anything, and pathologists learn it too late. But at least the pathologists are learning it. And that was a great improvement with Joseph Breyer in Vienna. But Netherlands, England, were other places that were developing a curiosity and developing training places. So the original training schools for veterinary ophthalmology was in Europe. And then Duke Elder in 1955 to 58 came out with his series, one of which is The Eye in Evolution. Well, evolution means how did it come from paramecium, from a frog, from a butterfly? How did all of this develop? And little by little, we started incrementally knowing more. And then we decided to establish veterinary ophthalmology societies. So in 1957, I guess, was the first American society. And that actually branched off of an Animal Hospital Association meeting in Miami. So the people said, well, it's time to do this. Ophthalmologists have devices. They have lasers. They have instruments. Why can't we learn more about our animals? And one, of course, the most important animal to many people was the horse. The horse was important because it was important for military. It was important for equestrian activities. It was a symbol of elegance and wealth. And rarely it was even a source of food. So keeping horses alive and seeing was very important. So the first specialty in veterinary medicine was ophthalmology because you could actually look in. You could see what was going on, and you possibly could do something. And then with current developments, with improved imaging, imaging mean like an X-ray, but more than that, ultrasound can tell you the tissues of an eye and can be very quick and can be done without anesthetizing an animal. The OCT, which is the optical coherence tomography, takes a picture of the retina, can tell you optic nerve and retinal disease. Now, some of that is non-surgical, but it may be treatable. Take glaucoma, because you may not know an animal has glaucoma, but the optic nerve will tell you. And with the obvious ability to use medications, because the eye can accept a drop very easily, you can actually treat many of these things. Cataract surgery became another interesting venue. They watched human cataract surgery and realized in the old days, you made a big slit in the eye, you made a slit in the lens, and you took the whole lens out, leaving the fluids behind the eye to wish and wash around. But in animals, that was possibly caused a lot of inflammation, and there was no intraocular implant to restore the vision. Then came extracapsular surgery, where you save the capsule so it was a barrier to the vitreous fluids wishing around and a barrier to retinal detachment. But again, it could cloud up with time. And eventually, with humans, we have phacoemulsification, high-speed sound breaks up the lens. You suck it out with fine devices, small incision. In humans, no stitch. Animals, one stitch that's dissolvable. And you can put a lens in to mitigate the loss of focus power. So using ophthalmology techniques, veterinary ophthalmologists were able to apply the same things to animals, primarily to dogs, but also to other animals that developed cataracts, whether it's a tiger, a crocodile, a monkey, etc. You can actually measure it. But over the course of time, only about 25 breeds of dogs have been thoroughly studied. Interestingly enough, 60 species of dogs get dry eyes. And you can tell that by the mucus that forms. And this mucus forms because the watery tears become deficient, because they're not getting enough omega-3 in their diet, for instance. So if you see this, you want to water them down with artificial tears or ointment 2 or 3 times a day. That ointment, the goop in the corner of the eye, can start breeding bacteria, which is not good. So veterinary ophthalmology is speeding along parallel to regular ophthalmology and has been a great satisfaction to people who know that their animals can actually have a chance to do better. But animals have a little different retina structure. They have a tapetum behind the retina. They have different sizes of pupils, as you know, the cat eye. They have different levels of color vision, depending on whether they're a bird or a fish, a nighttime hunter or a daytime hunter. And the success rate of cataract surgery has gotten much better. But the last thing to do is start feeding your animals vitamins, because their retina is exposed to the light all the time. They don't wear sunglasses. They need protection, just as you and I need protection. And that's one of the reasons I recommended for my dogs taking appropriate vitamins. I've created iComplexCS.com, great for the retina, nourishes the lens, and my dog with omega-3s added on had glossy fur for a 170-pound Newfoundland. So vitamins are going to help save your dog, your cat, your monkey, whatever's eyes, in appropriate body size. Consult your veterinary ophthalmologist or veterinarian and see what they have to say about it. But nutrition is key, caring for your animals is key, and they're part of our world and part of our lives, which enrich us so much. I'm Dr. Rob Abel, the Wizard of Oz, on RadioMD.com. Please listen to this segment. Download other segments. Go to my show page at radiomd.com/ The Wizard of Oz Show. Stay well, pay attention to your health, pay attention to your eyes, and be a great human being.